The message tonight is called What's the Point? Which I know is probably what some of us will be thinking tomorrow morning when the alarm goes off, but actually it's appropriate for tonight. What is the point? That's what I want to look at this evening. We're going to tell a story from John 4, but in telling that story, it would really help me if I could have two volunteers who are of a kind of frustrated drama student disposition. I want two people, a guy and a lady, who just feel like, you know, they can really help me tell this story. And you need to run to the front right now. I need two of you. Come on, I know we've got some out there. I need a guy and a lady to play the parts in this story. Everyone's looking around at somebody else. Come on. If you come up here, Kath, we need a guy. Come on. Come on, guys. We need a guy. I need a guy. Guys, looking a bit shy. Everyone's looking around. Yeah, come on. Fantastic. Let's welcome these guys up. Very brave. Thank you. Okay, so if you've got a Bible, you can turn to John 4. You guys are going to tell a story about Jesus. You will be Jesus. Is that all right? Yeah, great. Don't mind that. And you will play a woman in the story. Okay, so we will play it. And the thing is, though, this is in the theme of mime, okay? So you don't have to say anything. I'll do the words. You just have to act it. Bring this story alive. Very familiar story, okay? So here we go. So Jesus is walking. He's on his way to Galilee, okay? He's walking along, and he's heading through... he's heading through, you might have to walk on the spot because this bit goes on for a bit. He's heading through a place called Samaria. We have to understand, keep going. It was a long walk. We have to understand that Samaria, the Samaritans and the Jews were at odds with it. They hated one another, basically. And so Jesus is going through a very hostile environment as he's walking there. Now, he gets to a town and he sees a well. And he sits down at the well, on the well, just kind of, yeah, that's all right, that'll be good. Now, there's a woman who comes to the well, and she has come to draw water. It's noon, it's the middle of the day, she's come to draw water. What's the, oh, you've got your head thing, oh, very good, yeah, you've got your jar, haven't you, on your head. Excellent, I like that. So she's got her jar on her head, I like that, that's good, and she's coming to draw water. Now, Jesus says to her, give me a drink, okay? And she is shocked. She is shocked. Really shocked. Really, really shocked. A bit more shocked than that. Yeah, very good. Because, you see, Jews do not talk to Samaritans, and men don't talk to women, and particularly rabbis don't really talk to anyone. So there's this shock going on. So she says to him, you're a Jew, I'm a Samaritan. Haven't you realized that I am a Samaritan, you're a Jew, and I'm a woman and you're a man? What is going on here? This is not right. And Jesus says to her, he says this, if you knew the gift of God, and if you knew the gift of God and who it is that's talking to you and saying, give me a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. Now, she said, it's really bringing it alive. I feel like I'm there. So she says, you look a bit odd to me. She says, you know, this well is 70 feet deep. How are you going to draw water? You haven't even got a bucket. There's nothing you've got to draw water. So Jesus says this. He says... I think you're going off piece now. Jesus says, everyone who drinks of this water will be thirsty again. But he says, whoever drinks of the water that I give him, whoever drinks of that water will become a spring of water welling up from the inside to eternal life. Now she's interested. And she thinks to herself, he might be nuts, but if I don't ever have to come to this well again, that has saved me hours and hours and hours. If he's selling, I'm buying. And so then Jesus drops a bombshell because he says, go and get your husband. And she says, I don't have a husband. And Jesus says, you're right. You don't have a husband. In fact, you've had five husbands. And the one you have now is not your husband. What you've said is true. Well, the woman is just completely flawed. How could Jesus possibly have known this? But, you know, because she's had five husbands, she's been in five marriages, she's learned a bit from her five husbands. What do most husbands do when their wives ask them a question they don't want to answer? They change the subject. So she's learned this, and so that's what she does. She changes the subject, and she asks him a religious question. She says, look, the Jews say we should worship on that mountain over there, but we think we should worship on this mountain here. Which is it? And Jesus says, believe me, the hour is coming when neither on this mountain or on Jerusalem will you worship. You worship what you don't know, but we worship what we know. But the hour is coming when we will worship in spirit and in truth, because that's what the Father's asking for. People who worship him in spirit and in truth.
I don't know how to mind that.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's quite tricky. Well, the woman doesn't really know what to do with this. She says, I know the Messiah's coming, and when he comes, he's going to explain everything. And Jesus says, that'll be me then. That would be me. Now, right at that moment, the disciples appear, and the woman goes back into town to tell everything that she has seen. I need a disciple, just a random disciple. Help me, somebody, just a disciple, quickly. Disciple, very quick. Yeah, come there, disciple. Thank you, guys. So the disciples turn up. They've been in town shopping, and they turn up, and they are shocked. I'm not sure that's how Jesus would have treated. Anyway, he might have done. Who's to argue with that? So they are shocked that Jesus is talking to a woman, but they don't want to say anything. They don't want to say anything. They're shocked about this. And so they say, Jesus, you know, something must be wrong. Maybe, you know, low blood sugar or something's wrong with you. Talking to this woman, have some bread. Have something to eat. Because they brought their shopping with them. But Jesus says, no, no, no. He says, no. He says, no. He says, my food is to do the will of him who sent me. And he says, don't you yet say there are 4 months until the harvest? He says, look, 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 lift your eyes. The fields are white with harvest right now. Already one is reaping and getting wages, and the sower is sowing and getting wages, and both will receive a wage for eternity together. I sent you to reap for that which you didn't labor. Others have labored, but you have entered into their labor. Now, the story goes that the woman comes back and she... Yep, you. Well, we'll just pretend. And she brings with her a whole crowd of people. And they say to her, listen, at first we believed that this was Jesus because of what you said, but now we believe because of what we have heard ourselves. And there endeth the story for tonight. Let's thank these guys. Very good. Very, very good. Some of you now, you need to slip forward 2,000 years. You're back. You're back here with us in Bedford. Okay, you're here. Now, for many years, we have, as a community, expressed our purpose, the what is the point, the reason we exist, through an image of a compass. But we felt, for one reason or another, to change that and to express it, not to change our purpose, the reason we exist, but to change how we express it to these four things. We believe we're called to love God, to love the church, to love the city, and I'll explain that, and to love the nations. We believe this is why we exist as individuals in a community together. And this passage actually unpacks those things beautifully. Firstly, we are called to love God, to know and worship God. And this story that we told tonight has been called one of the greatest exposés of worship in the entire Bible. It's phenomenal that Jesus reveals such truth to this woman who is actually, as we'll find out, ostracized in her community. He doesn't reveal it to the religious leaders. He reveals it to her. It tells us something amazing about God. God and who Jesus is. You see, because in the day there were two main kind of centers of worship. There was Jerusalem and there was Mount Gerizim. These two kind of mountains, these two centers of worship, were the ones that affected these two communities, the Samaritans and the Jews. But Jesus comes along and says, that is all over. That is finished. That is terminated right now, because from now on, God himself is creating a people who will be worshippers from the inside out. And wherever they go, they will carry worship with them. Whether they, when they get up in the morning to when they go to bed at night, they will be walking, talking worship communities, worship centers. They will literally, as Paul writes later, be temples of the Holy Spirit. No longer will God just dwell on a mountain. He will dwell within his church itself. That's what Jesus was communicating. The fact that we can know God and connect with him in a way that was unprecedented before this story was told, before these scenes. Your identity, if you're a believer here tonight, has been so radically transformed that you walk and talk and breathe God, because he promises to live within each one of us. Even in that moment that when you are most alone, God says, I will never leave you or forsake you. I will never leave you or forsake you. People in these days could not have said that in the same way that we can say it today. And so Jesus says in this story, God is spirit. It's one of the four God is statements in the Bible. God is spirit, God is love, God is light, God is a consuming fire. Someone needs to write a song about those four, because they so package up who God is. God is spirit, which means he is everywhere. We can connect with him at any point. We don't have to go to a certain religious place to do so. God is love, which means he is our Father who loves us. God is light, which means he is truth and he welcomes us into truth. And God is a consuming fire, which means that he purifies us from all the dross that would make us fall short of who he's made us to be. It's a powerful picture of who God is. This is what Mark Stibbe writes about this father. I love this quote. He is the ultimate father, and he invites us to become his kids. He dwells beyond the first heaven, the atmosphere in which we live and in which the birds fly, beyond outer space, the second heaven, and in the third heaven, as the Bible calls it, where he is seated in glory. It means that there is no one bigger than our dad. He reigns, he rules, and he rocks. He flung stars into space. He fashioned the blazing sun, the deep lagoons of cloud and cluster. He created the planets, the constellations, the galaxies. He conceived the Milky Way, the Helix Nebula, the Pleiades. He made bubbles and arcs and nebula and auroras. He paints supernovas in effervescent colors and stellar jets in iridescent glory. He outthinks the physicist, and he dazzles the theologian. He preoccupies the astronomer and inspires the poet with abundant wonder. He is beyond the reach of the Hubble telescope or the probing range of any orbiter. He is what Einstein called the superior reasoning power, and the Bible calls the father of heavenly lights. He is my dad. He is your dad. Our dad, who is in heaven, the third heaven, who dwells in inapproachable life, light, and one who will one day make his home with us on this tiny dot called Earth. That's who he is. That's who he is. And as we grow in the revelation of that, the worship that flows out of us grows and grows and grows as we understand who our Father is. And so our goal in the next 2 years is that we would grow as a family in our passion, in our pursuit of God, in our wholehearted devotion towards him. We want to follow that kind of aim with some practical things. We want to equip and challenge every age group to make sure they are developing a fully satisfying, connected, devotional life to God. I just feel this is a challenge for us, that from the youngest to the oldest, we need to make sure we've got the basics covered, that we are connecting and living out of the reality of who we are as these mini worship temples wherever we go. That we don't just assume that for anyone, but that from the youngest to the oldest, from those who've just joined our community to those who've been around for years, that we are all connecting with this Father. And that any barrier to that is removed and got out of the way. And there's a challenge for us in that. You know, I challenged us last year that only 1 in 10 Christians have ever read the Bible from cover to cover. 1 in 10 have ever read the Bible from cover to cover. Let us change that statistic here. I don't know what that statistic's like in this church. I think we're going to do a survey some point in the next few months, so we will find out. Not in a way to shame anyone, but just to find out, just to be interested, because we need to change that statistic. If that's the same in this church as it is in many churches across the nation, we need to change that, because we cannot worship someone we don't know. And we cannot know him fully without referencing the one place that he has revealed himself most fully, his word. And God is calling us to be lovers of his words. And you know, the average Briton watches 36 minutes of adverts per day. 36 minutes per day on average, which means there are some people who are, because I don't ever watch any, there are some people who are watching a whole host more than that. So 36 minutes a day. Now, who here has ever had their life changed by an advert? Don't put your hand up. People will mock you. Who's had their life? Nobody. And yet we're slavishly watching adverts day after day after day after day when it has no beneficial effect on our lives whatsoever. And yet, if we were just to read the Bible for 15 minutes per day, we would read it through in a year. And if we were to read it for 36 minutes per day, we would read it twice through from cover to cover. And you could read 2 different versions just by switching off the adverts for the year. And I wonder if your life would be changed. I think it would. Who here has ever read the Bible and their life has been changed? I really am looking for a response at this point. Or we've got a whole different message. So we want to, you can go on our website, kingsarms.org/Bible, and there's a whole lot of reading plans there just to help facilitate this for you. We want to develop a radical priority for prayer, worship, for the presence of God. You know, last Sunday, if you were here in the morning, we just let pretty much the whole morning go over to worship because the presence of God came. We're just hungry for that. And you know, this is a whole, just an aside, just, you know, the question for us, I guess, and the question for each one of us is, how are you going to grow this year? What's the next step for you? I don't care whether you've been a Christian for 5 minutes or for 50 years. There is another step for you. There is another level for you to press through into. You will never get bored in heaven because there is something more of God to discover. He is infinite. And so what's the next step for you? Here's one practical thing. Have you ever thought about the fact that worship is a whole body experience? That we can sometimes do things that are just religious on the outside, whereas actually when we connect them with the heart, they are meaningful. For example, the scripture talks about our heads in worship. And it says in worship we can bow our heads. What does it mean when you bow your head? When you say grace before a meal in a restaurant, what does it mean when you bow your head? What it means is, God, I respect you. I respect you more than these people around me who are going to think I look weird because I'm bowing my head. God, I respect you. I bow my head before you right now. That's what it means. That the hands are powerful in worship. Now, we don't just use our hands for no reason. You know, Psalm 63, David says, lift your hands to the Lord in your worship. Lift your hands. This is not just a strange thing to do. It's biblical. Lift your hands. Why do we lift our hands? For 2 reasons. One, because when we lift our hands, it's what? It's an act of celebration, isn't it? It's like we've scored a goal. Get in. It's that kind of feeling. And of course, Jesus scored the ultimate goal, didn't he? He got in. So we can lift our hands because of that. But it's also, when we lift our hands, it's a reverence of what? When you lift your hands at a pop concert or a music concert, why do you lift your hands? It's a reference to majesty, isn't it? To something great that you are seeing and witnessing. When we lift our hands, it's a sign, I have seen something great. I have witnessed something great. And that's what I'm seeing and referencing. In Psalm 146, it says, spread your hands before God. What does that mean? When we spread our hands, it means I'm ready to receive. It means, God, I need something here. I need something, and I am open to receive from you because I recognize you're the only one who can give me anything. What about your knees? Put your hands on your knees for a minute. I won a knobbly knee competition one time as a child. I still need healing prayer. But they shut down parties that do that kind of thing now. But your knees are actually a tool of worship. It talks in the Psalms, it says, kneel before God. Again and again it says, kneel before him. Why do we kneel before God? What's the reason that we kneel? Well, you know, kneeling, when you kneel before someone, what is it? It's an act of submission. So if you're in your life, have you ever been in a situation where God has asked you to do something you didn't want to do? God has spoken to you and he's asked you to do something you didn't want to do. If you haven't ever had that and you're a Christian, I'm not sure you've ever heard God speak. Maybe it's just me. Because he delights in asking us to do things that we don't want to do, because it's often those things that change us from the inside out. Well, what's a great response when you're in worship and you're wrestling with that stuff? Kneel. Kneel and say, God, your will be done, not my will. Submit to his will. And of course, you know, falling prostrate, which I won't do because it will ruin the microphone. Falling prostrate before God, what does that mean? What does it communicate? It says, God, I'm in awe of you. You know, I wonder if we do enough of this in our worship. Do we sometimes get stuck in our aisles? Do we sometimes in our bedroom just get stuck, tucked up in bed with a, you know, nice cup of coffee? Or are we saying, God, I'm going to give myself to you in worship. This is going to be a whole body experience for me. I'm going to get myself out of my comfort zone. I'm going to put the duvet aside. I'm going to worship you. I'm going to worship you with all that I am for these few moments. So love God. That's the first purpose. Love the church. Two things in this story that give us a picture of the church. The church is a group of people who've seen Jesus for who he is. We used to think Jesus was irrelevant. We used to think he was either didn't exist or he was irrelevant to our lives. But the church is a group of people who suddenly realize, oh gosh, I had it wrong. I thought Jesus was irrelevant, but now I realize he is front and center of everything. That everything revolves around him and what he has done. That's what the church is. It's a community from different backgrounds, different races, different beliefs, different family upbringings, different sins and ways that we've messed up. But it's a people who are united about one thing and one thing only, and that's that person of Jesus Christ. That's what the church is. And you see that in this story, because the woman came to the well at noon. Now, noon was the hottest part of the day, of course, and she also came on her own. In those days, women would come in the cool of the day, morning or evening, to get water, and they would never go on their own. They would always go with somebody else for safety. A group of women would go together. Why then does this woman come on her own? Why does she go on her own at the wrong time, as if it were to avoid everybody else? There's only one explanation. She was ostracized from her community. She came on her own because nobody would let her come any other time. She was so filled with shame because of the life that she'd lived. She had to come separate. She was ostracized. And yet, by the end of the story, what happens? The whole community have gathered around her and they're celebrating her story and saying, your story's changed our lives and now we believe in him because of what you said, and now it's also because of what we've seen. She goes from the outside of the community to the inside of the community because of one man, and that man is Jesus Christ. He is the orbit, he is the center around which everything in this story orbits. And so we see that in the church. That's why we belong together. That's why we can put aside differences. And that's why we can stop the griping and the complaining about one another, because of him and what he has done. And that's why we can expect relational transformation as well, because of Jesus. We had a story this last year. A lady, she's had massive freedom herself. But she said, you know, it's not affected my family yet. My family is still completely dysfunctional. And then she texted me just before Christmas, I think it was. She said this: my mum has just said sorry and that she loves me more than life itself. She never ever says sorry or that she loves me. I just cried and cried and cried. What a great present from my Heavenly Father. Come on. That is what this is about. This belonging results in transformation, not just in our own lives, but in even our families. So church is a new family. It's a place to belong. And so in the next few years, these 2 years, we want to see this community grow to 1,000. Phil prophesied that would be what we would see. not for our glory, but for his glory. And we want to see beyond that. We want to see these things called clusters established. Now, we believe passionately in small groups, groups of 10 to 15 people, but we feel like actually that it's quite easy to belong to a group of 10 and yet at the same time feel quite lost here on a Sunday morning or an evening, perhaps because some of the people in your small group aren't here. And so we feel like actually we need to create these mid-sized communities, groups of small groups that together are on a mission together but also connected together. We feel like it will help us achieve our aim of being big but feeling small. That's what we're after. Being big but feeling small. We want to see both things happen at once. And so we want to see 10 of these clusters started in this next couple of years. That's one of our goals. And then beyond that, we see in this church, when we love the church, we'll not only belong, but we'll also serve. That's what you see from this story. You see, Jesus makes this strange statement about water, doesn't he? Flowing up from inside out. That is the story of the church. It's a place where individuals do more than they possibly ever could on their own or under their own steam because of the Spirit inside of them. It's a place where the Spirit inside of them transforms them to such an extent that they do things that otherwise they would have thought were impossible. They serve in such ways that otherwise they thought would have been possible, not from their own resources, but from the resources of God himself. And so in these 2 years, we want to add at least another 100 committed people. What I mean by that is we don't have a membership, but what we do have, if you want to be part of this community, we say, look, we want you to serve with all your strength. We want you to give financially and faithfully, and want you to be part of a small group. And we want 100 people to say, I will do those three things. I will commit. I'll not just turn up on a Sunday, but I will commit to be part of the heart and the heart and the lifeblood of this community. And so you can see on your chairs there's some little booklets about how you can get involved in serving, how you can get involved in giving, how you can get involved in connecting in a small group. All three of those are critical. And that's the second statement that explains what the point is. We exist to love the church. And thirdly, we exist to love the city. Now, immediately, the sharp among you will be thinking, Bedford isn't a city. Good point. We had thought of that. The thing is, the reason we put it in quotes is this. Of course, the city represents the place where our church building is, Bedford. But also the city represents more than that. It represents every place where our real church, which is you and I, not the bricks and mortar, but you and I, our real church, every place where we have influence or could have influence, that is the city. That is the city for you and me. So your city might be in London when you go to work. It might be in Cambridge. It might be in Milton Keynes. It might be in Biggleswade. Your city, your place of influence is in your workplace. It's in your home. It's in your street. It's in your university. It's in your school. Wherever you go and it could have influence, that is your city. And what we're saying is our purpose, our third purpose, is to love that city wherever you go. It's recognizing that. One of our girls in our youth group got hold of this because she realized that part of her city was Facebook. I mean, somebody needs to do something with that thing. God save Facebook. You see, she realized that she could have a positive impact on Facebook. And so she started offering to pray for her friends over Facebook. And they started to accept. She prayed for them. A number of them, as she prayed for them, received complete freedom in their bodies, pain-free, after praying for them over Facebook. One of them has even started a little blog to blog about how they didn't believe in God, but now they're not so sure. You see, there's a reality. When I start to think like this, that my city is wherever I have influence, suddenly everything becomes an opportunity. Caroline and I had an experience this summer where we went to London. I took her to London for the day, just for kind of a special day together. And we had a really fun day. At the end of the day, we came home, and I said, she said, you know, did you enjoy the day? I said, it was a really fun day, but I was just gutted that we didn't have an opportunity to share with anyone about Jesus during the day. And she said, what do you mean you didn't have an opportunity? I said, well, we didn't really have an opportunity. I just was praying all day for an opportunity, and you know, under my breath, and just didn't get one. And she said, oh, she said, that's not right. She said, She said, I saw loads of opportunities today. She said, I didn't take them because I was kind of wanting just to be with you and me, so I didn't take them. She said, but there were loads. She said, what about that couple we sat next to on the train? You know, we got chatting to them. That was easily an opportunity. And then she said, then there was that couple on the bench at lunch. We were talking to them, you know, that a French couple. That was a fantastic opportunity there. And she said, there was even that guy that we bumped into twice in two different locations in London. And you even said to him, man, this is a coincidence. I wonder what's behind this. She said, that was a massive opportunity right there. I mean, that was like an open door. You could have driven a bus through that one. And I was like, oh, you're right. You're right. You see, so often we go through life, don't we, not realizing that opportunities are everywhere. Opportunities are everywhere if only we will open our eyes. And of course, that's what Jesus says in this passage, isn't it? What does he say to the disciples? Look! 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 The fields are white for harvest if you will just see it. If you will just see it, the fields are white. If you will open your spiritual eyes, they're like, look, what, look, what, look, where, look, what. If you will just open your spiritual eyes to see what I see, you will see that the fields are white for harvest everywhere. There are people ready to come through, ready to take another step forward towards knowing God everywhere, if we will only look. And that's the story. That's why we're called to love the city, to see those opportunities, those places of influence that God has got for us, and to run into them, to look at each place in turn, to love our city. There are numbers of different areas. You know, in the next 2 years, we want to significantly increase our kingdom influence in the areas. There's seven main areas we want to hit. Firstly, arts and entertainment. I mean, someone needs to do something. Instead of complaining about it, we need to start raising up people who change it, who write and produce and act and do things that make a difference in the whole realm of arts and entertainment. Business, education. Never was there a time when education needed Christians to stand up and be counted as there is today. It is in crisis. In the family, it's so great to start this marriage course, but there are other things that need to be done on top of that to see families transform. Even the world, even the secular society realizes our families are in a mess. We abandoned them back in the 60s, and suddenly we realize 50 years later, oh dear, we need the family, and it's shot to pieces. There has never been a time where the church needs to rise up and say, we have a solution here, and we have someone who can heal the pain of the last 50 years of damage that's been done through the secular agenda. The government, the media, the religious area. We are called to find these areas, to find the area that God has put on your heart. In fact, you probably don't even need to find it. You probably know it already. And to say, God, use me to influence this place. Use me to impact this area. Use me to make a difference in this area over these next years. You see, Jesus does this whole story at a well, at the equivalent of a water fountain. You know, what breakthrough could happen in your workplace if you suddenly started to see your water fountain, your water cooler, in the same way that Jesus saw that well? What breakthrough could occur if you started to see that place, that common place that everyone goes to, that common place in your workplace, in your street, that common place, that common ground that everyone goes, if you started to see it through, we started to see it through the eyes of, look, the fields are white for harvest. That's what God is calling us to. And when we find that place, we're called to serve with a kindly word, a gesture, something just basic, loving people. We're called to demonstrate. Notice that this story really cracks open when Jesus gives a word of knowledge about the woman having five husbands. Suddenly we go from a normal story with a few strange sayings from Jesus to boom. We're on a different league at that point. That's why we will never give up going after the demonstration, the manifest demonstration of the power of God. Otherwise, we're just the same as a nice social club, unless we have God himself doing the stuff that only God can do. And Jesus never, ever said to the disciples, just preach the gospel. He always says, preach the gospel and perform signs. Heal the sick, set free the oppressed. They always go together. That's why we are called to do that very same thing. We need to keep pushing for this breakthrough, this freedom for those around us wherever we go. We need to see more and more in this year than we've ever seen before. Last year I was in a restaurant in a Muslim nation. I was just, as I was there, getting to the end to pay for the meal, I felt God speak to me about the waiter. And so as we were paying, I said to him, have you got a pain in your neck down this side? And he said, no, I haven't. I thought, oh, rats. But then there was another waiter who looked almost identical. They could have been twins. He said, I've got a pain down in my neck. I thought, well, maybe I got you guys mixed up, or maybe I just got it wrong. Anyway, who cares? I said, okay, can I pray for you? He's like, both Muslims. He said, yeah, sure. So prayed for him. All the pain goes. His neck is free. He's clapping. He's like, yay! Really super excited. Genuine healing. His friend then, who didn't have the neck pain, suddenly says, well, I've got knee pain. Can you pray for that? So we pray for him in this restaurant, in a Muslim nation, with two Muslims. You see, there's something about the demonstration of God that cracks open any situation if we will run with it and push through for it. And then there's the declaration, I am the Messiah. That's what Jesus tells her. Notice, though, that the woman then goes on and makes her own declarations. She tells her own story. And if you're familiar with the Gospels, you'll be aware there was another character who came to Jesus, a guy called Nicodemus. He was a religious leader. He'd been studying the scriptures for his entire life, but he came to Jesus because of his fear. He came in secret. He came in secret. He clearly learned from Jesus and was clearly converted at that point because he was one of the ones who later was used in burying the body of Christ. But you know what? You never hear of his influence on his community around him. You never hear of the friends of Nicodemus who came through to faith in Christ. You never hear of them. Why? Because of his fear. Even though he was far more equipped and far more educated than she ever was, the thing that he didn't do and she did do was open her mouth and tell her story. That's what we're called to do, to declare who this Messiah is. That's the third thing, and the fourth is love the nations. To support churches, to transform communities. This whole thing starts with Jesus going to another nation. He goes to another nation and he overcomes social barriers, social difficulties. He talks to a woman which was taboo in those days. He overcomes these barriers to reach into this other nation, this nation of Samaria. And it's the same for us. You know, we don't just want a big church. We want one where I'm asking God for one where Muslims, Sikhs, Hindus, atheists, a whole range of people from every different background come together to praise and give worship to Jesus Christ. In this story, the woman could not imagine anyone greater than Jacob. That's what she says. Are you greater than Jacob that you can get water out of this well? He dug the well. He made it 70 foot deep. Are you greater than Jacob? She could not imagine anyone greater than Jacob. And yet, by the end of it, she recognizes that Jesus is the Messiah. There are people out there in this town, in your areas of influence, who right now, they cannot imagine anyone greater than Muhammad, anyone greater than Buddha, anyone greater than Charles Darwin. They cannot imagine it. But at one point or other, they will come here, and if we play a part, they will be lifting their hands and falling on their knees before one who is greater than all of those, Jesus Christ. That's what we are called to do. That's what we are called to do, both in the nations here and the nations overseas. So in the next 2 years, we want to establish the nations and our call to nations right in the heart of this community, right in the heartbeat of this church. The power of God is on us to reach nations here in Bedford, but also overseas. And we're already beginning to see it as we send teams and as people come here. We want every cluster to connect with a nation. We want to impact particular nations. I know we've got a calling to send teams to many different nations, but actually we feel like a number of years ago, a guy came here and he told the story of their church that had been going to the same place in India for 25 years. And he said, we've built an orphanage, we've adopted a school, we've just gone twice a year, we've sent teams. Yeah, and I can never forgotten that. And I thought, we thought as a team, wouldn't it be great? Yes, we want to send teams all over the place. I mean, Phil's going to New Zealand, I'm going to Zimbabwe and South Africa. And a few. We want to send teams all over the place. But I believe God is calling us to take perhaps two or three particular nations and really make a connection. And so these couple of years, we're going to be praying for that. And you can pray with us that we find heart connections with people where we can send teams again and again and again and really invest and also receive from them. That's what we're after. So this is the point. This is what we're called to do, to love God, to love his church, to love the city, to love the nations. It's as simple as that. And I would urge you tonight, if you feel like, do you know what, my purpose, I've been living for something less than those things. I've been lining myself up with something less than those things. I would urge you tonight to lay those things down and go for this. To lay those things. This is why we exist. This is what it says in the scriptures. This is the reason that we live. And as we give ourselves to this, it is the most satisfying, it is the most rewarding life that we can possibly have. We are called to this stuff as a community, to live and breathe this stuff. Let's go for it this year. It's going to be a significant year this year. It's going to be a great year this year. Let's give ourselves to this.